Hey, football fans, it's Patrick Peterson, former three-time All-Pro NFL cornerback, and now the new host of First and Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game, every week, with new episodes dropping every Monday and Friday mornings. Plus, I'll be highlighting key matchups for DBs around the league on Patrick's Corner. Be sure to subscribe to First and Pod on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Chris and Amy Show.
You know who it is.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called the show.
Yeah. Now, Amy Marks-Kors, Chris Ronji on KMOX.
Good morning, friends. It is Wednesday. It doesn't feel like it. For some reason, it feels like Tuesday. Tuesday has no feel. So here we are. Welcome in. Glad to have you along. January 22nd of 2025. It is Amy. It is Chris. And we have a phone number that you can call throughout the show at 314-436-7900. Also, you can leave us a voice message directly from the Odyssey app. That's the application that you put on your phone where you can listen to the show live. Get all the podcasts later. If you missed anything, our entire show is podcasted, so you can go back and hear what you missed. And you can also listen to Cardinals baseball during the upcoming season.
Time now for the top of the order. The top three stories everybody will be talking about.
Well, the Rams settlement money has been allocated. More of it has been. We're going to talk to KMOX reporter Sean Malone on the compromise that was reached between the mayor and some alder people here in the city.
And St. Louis Metropolitan Police officers will get a 7% raise, and this as Missouri senators discuss future control of the police department, whether it will go to the state.
Two Senate bills will begin to be discussed at, well, a little bit less than an hour from now. Also, SLU basketball tonight hosting LaSalle. We've got the game, a 7 o'clock tip, which means we'll start the broadcast at 6:45. So, Amy Marks-Kors, when we spoke to governor candidate Mike Kehoe, this was when he was running for governor. He has since become the official governor of the state of Missouri this month. We talked to him about a number of topics in the state. Of course, we talk a lot about St. Louis because, well, we're here and we care, and there are a lot of improvements that need to be made. One of the things that he wants to do, and a lot of Republican legislators in the state of Missouri, what they want to do is assume control of the St. Louis Police Department, which it was in the past. Voters, though, about 13 years ago, voted to give control back to the city, which is where it's been since 2012. So this is an effort the state wants to undertake. It's clearly not very popular with people in the city, not popular with the mayor, who is in Jefferson City, to argue against it. We had Robert Tracy, the new police chief, on the show. He argued against the idea, saying that it probably wasn't going to do what the state believes it is going to do. I kind of side with them on this. I don't know that it's necessary, especially when we've seen it done in other parts of the state like Kansas City. And even in Kansas City, they are arguing that the state assuming control did not really do the things that it was supposed to do, like curbing crime. Mm-hmm. So it seems like an unnecessary thing to me.
I don't know. I don't know what's going to fix the situation in St. Louis, to be honest. I do know we are short police officers. I do know that when it comes to preventing crime, there are provable methods, such as the presence of police officers, certainty that you will be caught if you commit a crime, and certainty that you'll be prosecuted. Not so much the severity of the punishment. It's not so much severity. It's just certainty, knowing that people are watching. People care. And I do feel like in the city of St. Louis, you don't always get that, whether that's because of the shortage of police officers or the policy or the approach. I don't know. We do know that Governor Mike Kehoe has been, in his words, very vocal, especially in the city itself, quote, that I think state control is appropriate for that police department. That's from Governor Kehoe. He said that back in November. He went on, quote, you're not going to have any private business consortium spend money and redevelop any inner city, not just St. Louis, unless they feel like their employees and their customers can be safe. And so yes, we've talked about being able to change the perception that St. Louis is a dangerous place to be. It relies on reality, but that perception will always lag behind reality.
It will take some time for it. And I am telling you right now, it doesn't matter to me how it gets done. I just want it to get done. So I could be convinced otherwise if somebody would say, look, we know for a fact if the state took control that the numbers, which have been improving, and that's what we're talking about reality here. The reality is that things have been improving in terms of crime. It seems like Chief Tracy has done a pretty good job so far. He's only been, it's not like he's been here for several years.
Gore is huge.
Gabe Gore has done a great job as a prosecutor. So the reality is, it does look like things are improving on the crime front in St. Louis. Not that there still aren't incidences here and there, of course. There are always going to be. But it's about the perception following that. And the way I see it is, if there is progress, and progress has been made, and you mentioned the lack of police officers or the shortage, Chief Tracy talked about that too. They continue to hire more people. And he's even brought back some people who had left the police department previously, feel better about the situation now, and have come back to the St. Louis Police Department to work. So if progress is being made, I don't know that the state taking control and interfering with any sort of momentum they've had is actually better for us.
Yeah. I don't know. I really and truly don't know. I want it to get better. But Ron, I like to say friend of the show, Jonah Goldberg, who did join us a couple of weeks ago, he always says that he rejects monocausal explanations. There's always more than one thing going on. And we've talked about crime, real crime, perception of crime, lack of people, and how if people feel safe, there are more people downtown. And if there are more people downtown, then the city does get safer. So I get that. I was driving around downtown last night, between like 9:30 and 10 p.m., Lafayette, Tucker, Clark, down to Soulard, 12th Street.
That is way past your bedtime.
I know. Out of curiosity. And also, looking at the condition of the roads, and I think they started to break up the ice on Lafayette and Soulard and so forth, because I was afraid I wasn't going to be able to get around. And on some of those main thoroughfares, like Russell and such, I was fine. But, we talk about recency bias and the bias of top of mind. Why does everyone always talk about gas prices? Because the signs are everywhere. There are signs literally every, couple hundred yards.
It seems people have stopped talking about gas prices and food prices since the beginning of November, even though nothing's changed.
Well,
I wonder why that is.
No, you know what I'm saying. For years, I'm talking about they will always talk about gas prices. People will always talk about gas prices. This is what people do for decades and decades. And it's because the signs are in front of us all the time. It's top of mind. It's a psychological thing that that has been, acknowledged. And the reason why I bring that up, driving around downtown last night, did I feel unsafe? Well, I mean, I'm in my car, but why did I feel like, okay, I wouldn't want to get out there? Primarily because there weren't people out and about, right?
Yeah.
So the two guys that I saw, one of them I think was trying to kill himself by car because I was driving down where 12th Street turns into Tucker. And he was really hard to see because all of his clothes were dark colored, like black clothes and a coat because it's cold out. And the car in front of me swerves last minute because the light had turned green and the car started going forward. And this guy stepped out in front of his car. Well, when all of that has happened and I wasn't even driving that fast, he took two steps further to get in front of my car. So I swerved. Then there was a car about 50 yards behind me that didn't see him because, again, he was really hard to see. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this poor guy is going to get hit. And I'm looking in the rearview mirror. And at the last minute, I see the car swerve around him. So that was a kind of a – it doesn't shake you up, but it's a little disconcerting. We're used to it in the city. And the other guy I saw
– that isn't – let me interject. That doesn't sound like a – that's not a violent crime.
No, I'm making
just
a point here.
That's
just
a weird incident
that
happened.
But I'm making a point here. And then the second guy I saw, right, was like stumbling around at the gas station. I thought, I don't want to get gas there because he was kind of falling over and grabbing the trash can. But there weren't other people around. And I thought, I think – when we talk about the city being dead, because I was like, would I want to live down here? Well, those are the only two people I saw on the street, which made me feel uncomfortable. And I thought, what if there were 1,000 people on the street plus those two? Well, then those two don't I don't want to say don't matter, but they don't make me feel as unsafe because there are other people around.
Yeah, well, that's right. I think the issue is there just aren't people and there
yes,
aren't things.
So my experience, it's, you say, who did you see on the street? I saw those two guys.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like the gas price sign. I saw the gas price sign. So there's a recency bias. There's a bias of like, well, that was my experience. What if there had been a Cardinal game and people were walking around? I probably wouldn't even be bringing that up. And I think that's my point. It's not just the crime. It's the deadness of the city. I didn't pass any bars. I didn't pass any restaurants where people were going in and out. And that alone, the presence of those establishments, changes my whole experience.
The deadness of the city is number one.
Yes.
And I know people will say, well, it's because of the crime. I don't think it's just because of crime. I think there are a million reasons why people move out of cities, why they move out of urban environments. And it's been happening in St. Louis for mm-hmm. decades. It's not just a last 5 years phenomenon. We had a little bit of a bump when the Rams were here and Washington Avenue was blowing up a little bit and then Ballpark Village gets built. But for the most part, for decades, people have been leaving the city of St. Louis, going back to before I was born. So this has just been a long trend in a very bad direction. So that, to me, mm-hmm. that's the number one thing, is that there just isn't a lot downtown. We spent a lot of time talking about it yesterday, about, you know, coming into the city and what you tell people to mm-hmm. go do. We had a texter who said yeah. they used to work down here and they'd be out and about in their lunch hour and they'd run into a tourist who would say, hey, where's the shopping? Yeah. Where do we go? And they would say, I don't know where to tell you to go because there isn't anywhere to go.
And like I said, that was
a bigger problem
my
than
point.
Anything.
So changing the perception of crime, let's say no crime happened last night. I still had two as a you know, single female driving around, two somewhat disconcerting experiences. And those experiences would have been minimized had there been lots of people milling about. And that's my point about yeah. why I think the perception is going to be doubly hard to change, because that's the only thing you're seeing.
Oh, well, the perception will take years to change.
A long time.
Because people have already had it ingrained forever that St. Louis is dangerous. You can't go down there without getting shot at, which day to day is just not true. We're here every day. We have colleagues who work every night down here, and that doesn't happen to them. So I don't know. I guess I have some hope, but I'm cautiously optimistic about where the city's going. Again, as far as the police department goes, I don't know that we want to ruin that momentum that it looks like they've been making. If you feel differently, if you agree with us, if you don't agree with us, let us know what you think. On the Odyssey app, you can drop us a voice message. Just record it straight from there and send it to us. Or you can text or call 314-436-7900. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.
And I think the model, the under state control, worked better. Not everybody gets exactly what they want, but I believe the business community and certainly the men and ladies in the police department believe that's a better model. And those are folks I think have a pretty good handle on what it takes to get public safety to a better level. And certainly they're people that I pay close attention to.
That is now Governor Mike Kehoe visiting with us on the Chris and Amy show weeks ago regarding the state of Missouri potentially taking over control again of the St. Louis Police Department. It is being discussed today in Jefferson City. In fact, about 11 o'clock, they're supposed to talk about Senate Bills 44 and 52. So we will see what the outcome of this ultimately is. We've asked you your opinions on the matter. 314-436-7900 to call or text us. Pedro in South St. Louis has phoned in. Hello, Pedro.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having my call. Big fan, Ranjana and Amy. Great show. Listen about every day.
Oh,
listen,
thank you.
I live in South St. Louis. You're welcome. I live in South St. Louis. Lived here a majority of my life. I'm from Chicago originally. St. Louis can be a dangerous place. I think we need to remember one thing. This is how I look at it. We like to imagine things without having a personal experience. And we can be driving around and see somebody that looks disheveled or we almost hit them. And, like, I get it, right? It can be scary, especially at night. But as St. Louis natives, we got to remember a lot of the crime that happens here is in very dense areas and very it's crime on crime, criminal on criminal. We have a big drug problem in this city, huge, whether you're on South Broadway, which I'm 5 minutes from, or you're in North County, okay? So a lot of the crime that we like to talk about is criminal on criminal, which is a problem in itself. However, we need to get out of our shell a little bit and not assume because somebody looks some way or looks a certain way or I don't know about that person. Like, we need to get out and realize this city is not as bad as we paint it to be. And I think per capita, obviously, it ranks in the top, whether it's number one or number three, year over year, because of the size of the city and because it's crime on crime and because we have a major drug problem. But we got to be not afraid to go downtown and go to a restaurant or go here or go there. And the more that we do that and the more that people see people going out, the better it's going to be, because I think we have a lot of us paint a narrative in our mind that it's dangerous. I'm not going to leave my house. I'm not going to leave South County to go downtown. And in my experience living in South St. Louis, it's just not the case. We imagine things based on assumptions sometimes, and I think that that gets ourselves in our own way. And I think this is a great city to live in when you look at the cost of living and a lot of other factors. And I think we like to imagine things based on somebody else's experience or based on one news clip that we see, and we don't realize that this city is not as dangerous as I think some of us think it is.
Well, certainly, Pedro, appreciate the phone call, and I agree with a lot of what you said. What's interesting is we were just talking about, and Pedro mentioned Chicago, we were talking about it off the air, and I visit there a lot, and have a lot of friends there, and Yeah, and I am stunned. I am stunned when I go back.
Yeah.
And people who live there will say things much like people who live outside of St. Louis will say about downtown. They'll say, oh, downtown has changed so much. It's awful. It sucks. And I stay down there a lot. Sometimes I'll stay with friends in a neighborhood, but I stay downtown a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's great. The city is great. There are people everywhere. There's stuff going on everywhere. There are restaurants and bars and things to do and shopping. It is not much different than when I lived there. And I really don't know what people are talking about, but narrative took hold after the pandemic and they haven't let it go.
And that's how I feel about Kansas City. If you go to Kansas City, people there talk about how the plaza is not what it used to be in downtown. It's not what it used to be because of crime. I go down there and I think, wow, this is really fun. You can walk around to restaurants. You can go tons of shopping right on the plaza. And they've put a curfew in, I believe, because I think kids were hanging out at night. Okay, that's fine. But there are still shops. There are still restaurants. And so I think it's normal for a city, the people in that city, to be very cognizant of crime statistics, to be very cognizant of their experiences. And I get the narrative, how that can ebb and flow when it comes to crime. The one thing, though, Ranj, that is not perception is the deadness. The deadness is real. That's the real thing. And that's why I say every city has crime. I get that. And I've said this before. Chicago is like a Where's Waldo book, right? The crime is Waldo on a crowded beach. That's Chicago, finding Waldo on a crowded beach. The crime's there, but it's a crowded beach. In St. Louis, Waldo's the only guy on the beach. The deadness is real.
In St. Louis, Dan is with us on KMOX. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, Ron, Jamie. You said something last segment that I just wanted to chime in. I love my town. I'm an original 314 guy. Grew up in South City in Germantown. But what I don't hear anybody talking about on the radio a lot, it's always about the bars and, you know, there's not enough to do. Most of my friends, we grew up in South City or in the city, and we moved out because of the school district. Mm. And if you look around all over this town, populated suburban areas that do well have great school districts. Why on earth would you send your children to the St. Louis City schools? And we have look, I've got three children that are grown and out of school, and we knew when my wife and I got married, we knew we were going to have kids. And I'm like, man, this is going to break us to send all of our kids to parochial school. We moved to the county, and we got into a good school district. But nobody's talking, and Ryan, you said something last segment. This has been going on for decades. You are absolutely correct, and it's because the city school district is awful. Why would you send your children there for an education when you can drive 7 miles and get into a really nice school district? I don't want to keep repeating myself, thank you for your time this morning.
Well, Dan, thank you for making the phone call. They're all very good points.
So true.
We need to get to a break. When we come back, we are going to talk with Sean Malone from the KMOX newsroom about the police department raise that some officers are getting. Also, the compromise between the city and the mayor on some of that Rams settlement money. Sean Malone, KMOX reporter, is next. All right, a lot going on in the city of St. Louis. As we've talked about already this morning, the potential for the state of Missouri to take control once again of the St. Louis Police Department, who is also about to give raises to certain officers here in the city. Of course, we got the Rams settlement money and the guy who's covering all of it because he is a Superman. It is Sean Malone.
I was more of a Batman fan.
Batman? Well, so you've got money. I'd like to borrow some.
But you can't fly.
Would you rather have all the money?
I don't have money, and I have my parents, so I'm far from Batman.
Damn. Well, Superman doesn't have his either. None of them do.
True. Yeah. But he's got his adoptive parents, at least. Yeah. Or at least one of them.
Well, yeah, I think one of them
died. I thought Superman's dad was like Klingon or Krignan or something. What is his name?
Jor-El.
Yes.
Anyway.
So, Sean Malone, we were talking about, as I mentioned, the possibility of Jefferson City taking control again of the police department. It's being discussed today. There are a couple of Senate bills that relate to this. So this against the backdrop of new raises coming in. What do we know right now about what's about to happen?
Yeah, so for the context with the raises, the city just announced that they're giving a 7% raise to officers and sergeants in the city of St. Louis. Starting salary is going to go up a couple thousand dollars from a little over 53 to just under 57, I think it is, working off the top of my head with those numbers there. What's interesting with those raises, and again, a caveat with those raises, they did reduce their budgeted force by about 120-something officers. They're far away from that number, so they're not laying officers off. They're not getting rid of any officers. They're just saying, okay, we're going to set the budget for fewer officers that we will now pay more money. That's kind of how they did this. But what's interesting with these raises is both the 2023 and the new round of raises, it is written in the contract that it is tied to local control. So if the state takes over the raise that was just announced yesterday at 7%, the raise in 2023, which was the largest in decades, goes away. So that's something that's interesting. Now, obviously, if the state takes control, I imagine that would be the first thing they would tackle is, okay, let's get these raises back on the books. I don't think that's something that they would say, all right, we got control of the St. Louis Police Department and just drop it and do nothing different.
Yeah, so this... the raises and that discussion, that was separate and ongoing regardless of the state takeover. This was not something that was supposed to be some kind of leverage.
There was already the 2023 raise that was a part of the leverage, I guess, if you will, that, you know, it's written in there outright that these raises go away if local control from St. Louis over the police department is removed. So I guess it's leverage. I mean, you can look at certainly the timing of this. Of this press conference was announced yesterday. It wasn't sent out with the mayor's, the night before they send out, you know, to all the press, letting you know where the mayor's going to be, if she'll have any availability during the day. That wasn't a part of that. So this is kind of announced in the last minute. This press conference announcing these raises. So you can maybe look at the timing of being, you know, if you want to be generous, convenient that the conversation of state control over the St. Louis City Police is coming up, and less than 24 hours before those conversations, a raise for officers is announced by, you know, the city, the union, the police department as well. So you can certainly look at that as convenient, but it certainly is a point of leverage at the end of the day that, listen, if you take away local control of the police department, the police are going to see a pay cut at the end of the day.
And I, like you said, the state would say they would do it definitely, but they would probably, have their own proposal for raising pay. But that could then set the whole process back.
Yeah, and I don't know the logistics with this. I know it's in Kansas City, there's that complicated court fight right now where, you know, the state voted to force the city of Kansas City I don't believe it was on the November ballot, but basically forced them to put X amount of their budget towards the police department, and, you know, should the whole state be able to vote to decide how much a municipality puts towards their budget towards a certain department, be it the police or anything else. So I think that's in a legal court fight right now. But so that's something that I'm with you. I imagine they would turn around and work to get
you
those
don't know
raises
for sure,
back.
But, yeah,
but I don't know for sure that's in the cards of something they would do or be able to just easily do.
So right now, the mayor is in Jefferson City. Mayor mm-hmm. Tashar Jones is in Jefferson City for these discussions. What needs to happen? What needs to happen for the state to take over the police force?
It sounds like they just need to get together and get a bill passed, both out of the Senate and the House. And if you look at what happened last session, it really seemed to be a lot of the infighting that prevented this from happening and potentially delayed it by a session, because it seemed like there was a consensus, enough of one, to pass that bill. But I believe, if I remember correctly, the Freedom Caucus was, you know, starting to fight about certain things, and they were slowing down progress and work being done in Jefferson City on legislation. Not just that one, but that was one of the bills that, you know, when the clock ran out, you know, that bill wasn't passed. It wasn't sitting on Governor Parson's desk. Now that Governor Kehoe is taking over, though, and Governor Kehoe has outright made this a point that he wants to see the state take over, I wonder if there's a more focused effort to get that legislation passed.
So if it passes, do we assume the city appeals, takes it to the Missouri Supreme Court? Or is that, does the city have that recourse?
I'm not sure. I imagine, you know, a lawsuit, I guess, would have to come first before then. Some sort of mechanism. And I'm sure that it wouldn't just be a surrender by the city of St. Right. Louis. I'm sure that a lawsuit would be filed in some capacity to try to block that. And then it would get tied up in the courts, you know, but, mm-hmm. you know, whether or not a judge decides to side with the city, or if they just say, listen, the state legislature passed this law, it is a law that's on the books. Judges are there to interpret the laws. If they interpret it as, sorry, the city, you know, takes over. And plus there's precedent with it happening in Kansas City as well, falling under state control. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the city could try to, you know, file a lawsuit to block that state takeover. But really, just looking at that, and again, I'm far from an attorney. There's a reason why I work in radio. But you look at that precedent, and that might make it a pretty easy case to side with the state.
The Senate Transportation, Infrastructure, and Public Safety Committee is to begin a hearing in a little bit less than 20 minutes in Jefferson City to talk about Senate Bills 52 and 44. So, of course, we'll keep you posted when we find out anything new. Sean Malone, let's now move. Why is it that we always have to use both of his names? Sean.
It feels like it flows. Like Al Gore. No one just says
Gore.
Yeah, or yeah. It's always Al Gore. Yeah, Sean Malone.
We have a compromise with the Rams settlement money. So what more do we know about it?
Well, we kind of, last time we talked about this, mentioned how we started to see it slowly heading this way, like we're getting towards this compromise. And, you know, it found a healthy middle ground between the two, where a lot of the infrastructure dollars are going to be focused on downtown, and North City and Southeast City are going to be prioritized over other parts of the city. And also a lot of the social programs are going to be remaining as well. So, for example, money is going to be set aside to subsidize childcare for city employees. And if that goes well, that could be expanded to the rest of the city. The Board of Aldermen will have the final say on whether or not it gets expanded. It can't be done without them voting to approve of it. So one department can't just decide to, we're going to expand the citywide now. There's a couple of layers to make sure that it can be done in the first place before the city tries to expand it to the rest of the city. Post-secondary education, subsidizing that for families of city employees as well. That's something else that remains. And so it seems like both sides got a lot of what they wanted, not everything that they wanted. But both sides seem to be
compromise.
Happy about this compromise. Yeah,
a healthy
compromise in government.
That's the way things
work. Thought.
Well.
When we would talk about the money that's going downtown, super important to note that the private sector, Greater St. Louis, is going to match any of that funding. Is it $73 million, $74 million going downtown? They'll match that, which is awesome. But when we say things like Okay, significant funding going to citywide infrastructure. Another $50 million spent on workforce investments. Is that as specific as we are right now? Like, do we know if that infrastructure is like the water pipes, you know, the main pipes? Do we know if workforce investments is 911 dispatchers?
There is $30-something million that is set aside specifically for water infrastructure, you know, the water lines and what have you. There's nothing set aside for 911 dispatchers or anything like that.
But it doesn't mean it's not under that umbrella.
Expanding the workforce does get, that's where some of the programs I mentioned that included subsidized childcare for city employees, that falls under there. That's about $30 million set aside for that. There was another $10 that was set aside for post-secondary education opportunities. So those are, you know, those are the more, I guess, details of it. I haven't had a chance to review the full bill today, but there are some details that aren't fully worked out at this point, like how exactly the money is going to be dispersed. There was some talk initially about setting up a whole bunch of committees that are going to, and boards that are going to figure out how to disperse this money. And, you know, one consensus that Aldermanic President Megan Green said she heard is that, and this is something we've all seen play out, the city has a hard time filling what boards it does. You know, you look at the jail oversight board, they have a hard time finding people to sit on that. The civilian oversight board that does oversight for the police department, they've had trouble finding people to sit on that board. And now to create a bunch more boards that a bunch more people, because it was supposed to be public and private, you know, government officials and people in the private sector were going to be on these boards. Now you got to find a whole bunch more people to sit on these boards, take time out of their day. Then you got to find a date and time that works for everyone to meet together. I think that was a very unpopular opinion on both sides. So that's dead. The money is now going to go directly into the departments that already exist, and they're going to have to set their own parameters on how they're going to get dispersed. But again, those details have not been worked out at this point. They expect to get through that here in the committee meetings.
So several months ago, it may have been close to a year, there was a push from the city on their website that you could go if you were a city resident and you could give your input as to where you wanted the Rams settlement money to go. And it was something around 16,000 people who ended up filling out surveys, whether it was with the city or the Board of Aldermen, whatever it was, that gave their input, what they wanted to happen. Do we know how much of that they really considered when they ended up making the decisions they did on where the money will end up going?
They did quite a bit. You know, some of the top things that were in there were, you know, city infrastructure. That was one of the, you know, highest budget items. Water infrastructure, fixing the water lines, I think might have been number one. Really, the only big ticket item that was not included in any bill was raises for city employees, which finished third, if I remember correctly, in the survey. And the problem with that is, speaking with, you know, a couple different aldermen, city staff as well, it just wasn't reasonable for two specific reasons. Number one, a lot of city employees, they're union employees. So that meant negotiating with unions on these raises, and it's far more complicated than when it's non-union and you could just give a 2% raise across the board. Also, the other issue was, there was, even with the money that they've had, which now with interest has grown to $294 million, it was originally $250 million, there's not enough money to do enough raises for city employees that would make a difference over the long term. Like, it would have worked for a number of years, but after a certain point, that money would have dried up, and then you'd be sitting there with, okay, we used to pay people this much. Mm-hmm. We lost this pool of money with which we were pulling from to pay people that much. Do we raise taxes to keep paying people this much, or do we skip a couple years worth of raises because we gave them early, if you will, with this money that we were pulling from? So it just wasn't a reasonable, something that the city couldn't pull off, and if they could have, would have been complicated and would not have lasted.
Sean Malone, the Intrepid, we appreciate it as always. Thank you for
Sean
coming
the
in.
Intrepid.
The
You're
dude.
He's, seriously,
he's everywhere.
He's on it.
He's actually in Jefferson City right now.
It's unbelievable.
It's amazing.
Thank you, Sean.
Sean Malone, KMOX reporter with us here, and keep us posted if anything happens. We know he will. It's Chris and Amy on KMOX.
Now, did you see this with Chris and Amy?
Okay, this is crazy. There was a Paul Skenes one of one Major League Baseball debut card that was out there. People were waiting, and when I say people, I mean specifically the Pirates were waiting for this card to be pulled. It was considered baseball's golden ticket. It was through Topps, and it's a the card features a patch that was worn by Paul Skenes on the sleeve of his jersey from his Major League debut and his autograph. So Topps knew it was out there, and the Pittsburgh Pirates want the card. They want it to be placed at PNC Park. So here's what the Pirates offered to whoever pulled it. Two season tickets behind home plate at PNC Park for the next 30 years. An exclusive meet and greet with Paul Skenes. Two autographed Skenes jerseys. A softball game for 30 people at PNC Park with coaching from team alumni. Batting practice and warm-up with the team. Experiences at the team's spring training facility in Bradenton, Florida. And Skenes' girlfriend and LSU gymnast, Livy Dunn, promised that whoever pulled the card could sit with her in a suite for a Pirates game.
Who cares about that unless she's bringing her teammates?
And an 11-year-old boy, an 11-year-old boy from L.A. pulled the card. No word yet on whether he's going to take up the Pirates on that offer.
Well, how much is this card worth?
A lot.
Could he sell it if he wanted to?
Oh, I'm sure he can.
Okay.
Because also, they would have to move to Pittsburgh for the season tickets to be worth it.
Yeah.
Is that normal for a team to do that? For a card?
I don't know.
I didn't know the team would want it. But they want it at PNC Park.
I don't know much about the card thing, but it's not unusual for a team to give up a bunch of stuff to get a thing they want in return.
It's kind of amazing.
You know, like a baseball that matters, a significant home run ball. But usually it's not that much, so.
I've learned about card collecting in the last 2 years.
Well,
there's even, like, videos of people, like, opening packets. And like, oh, it's a something-something gloss, fuzzy something. I don't know. It's a world, man.
So speaking of pulling it, a man in London who, not his fault. He didn't do it. I'm going to tell you right now. But he was wrongfully accused of masturbating on a bus in London. And it took place back in May of 2021. He was identified with police with CCTV footage. The police go to his home. They arrest him. They hold him for 7 hours. It turns out they had the complete wrong guy. They didn't realize it until one officer who was a supervisor rolled in and said, "That guy doesn't look anything like the person in the camera." Police have given him the equivalent of $6,000 for his trouble. Not enough. The man was fired from his job.
Oh, my gosh.
He was banned from the bar that he used to go to. His pub, his local pub. And he was evicted.
This is Democracy Manifest.
Brent Naylor
was
arrested by six police officers in his home. He's lost all of these things, and for his trouble, he gets $6,000.
No, I would sue. I'm not even joking. I'm not particularly litigious, although I'm considering it. Absolutely, that's a lawsuit. That's awful. It's humiliating, and forever you'll be the guy going, "I didn't do it."
I'd rather be accused of murder.
It's actually less embarrassing.
Yes, it is.
I know. Wow. Because it's one thing to be wrongly accused of murder, but of being accused of that, you're just a creep. And people will always go, "He's the guy."
That's Amy Marks Kors. It'll follow him around forever.
Ugh.
That's Amy Marks Kors. I'm Chris Ranji. When we come back, we are going to talk to former Missouri Secretary of State, State Rep, Army Reserve Intelligence Officer, and a veteran. Jason Kander will be with us as President Trump has canceled some flights of refugees who were supposed to come into the United States from Afghanistan. It's a situation that Jason has been paying very close attention to. He's with us next on KMOX.